Hello there, and welcome to the Unfuck Your Biz with Braden podcast, a show to encourage and empower creative CEOs just like yourself through actionable legal, tax, and financial topics. I'm Braden Drake, an author, lawyer, tax pro, and educator, but you can just call me Braden, your gay best friend, here to help you unfuck that biz. If you're ready to dive in, grab a notebook, maybe some coffee, and buckle in to learn how you can implement solid strategies to build a profitable business. Well, hello, friend, and welcome back to the podcast. As always, this is your host, Braden, and today I am chatting about trademarks. So about a month ago, 2 months ago in February, we did a podcast episode all about lessons I've learned in the past year since launching our law firm. And today we're doing a similar topic, but we're going to narrow it in on trademarks specifically. So what we've learned about trademarks, specifically the trademark filing process in the past year. So in the past year, we filed about 22 trademark registration applications, and we've gotten back about 8 of those thus far. So enough to give us like a fair amount of learning experience that I thought now would be a good time to share with you all. Now, if you're not already familiar, the way that we kick off our trademark application process is through something we call trademark quickie searches. So normally, the way a traditional law firm would operate is you would reach out to them, say, hey, I'm interested in filing a trademark. They would charge you typically upfront their trademark fee, which is usually anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000. It can be a lot more expensive. Really big brands like Target, if they wanted to trademark something, Procter & Gamble, they're probably, you know, in the tens of thousands of dollars because there's a lot more research that goes into it. But for smaller businesses, usually $1,000 to $2,000, sometimes up to $3,000 is usually the starting point. And then once you retain them, they do a trademark search, and then they'll chat with you about the likelihood of approval of your trademark application. And then if it looks like it would probably get approved, they'll file it, or, you know, they might file it even if you have less than a 50% chance. It all depends on the circumstances. Sometimes that also might include them looking at trademark alternatives for you if that name is not available. We do it a little bit differently because we want to give folks the opportunity to figure out what their likelihood of approval would be before they pay our full trademark fee. And the way we do that is with our trademark quickie searches. I actually started it out as an experiment, charging $10, which was pretty wild. People like scooped those up super, super fast. And then we increased it. I think we increased to $25 and then $50. And we have since done another price increase to $100. I don't know if sharing the trajectory of the prices on this really helps my sales call sales cause, but you know that transparency is a big one of our core values. And I also just like to talk about general business principles, practices, lessons learned, all that kind of stuff, because I think it's helpful for those of you that listen to the podcast as well. So the main reason we've increased the price point is to really help our conversions, especially when it was only $10. There were a lot of people, I think, that just like paid for it because they were just curious to see what the result would say, not because they were genuinely interested in getting a trademark. And that's fine to a certain degree. It's fine for them, but the searches are relatively time consuming for us. And expensive. So now, if it was just like something where I could click a button and, you know, forward the email, $10 would be fabulous. But now we're looking at bringing in folks who are more serious about wanting to secure a trademark registration. And that price point, I think, is going to accommodate that goal of increasing our conversions. So we're opening 5 new spots for the quickie search. If you want to grab one and get started, you can go to notavglaw.com/TM quickie. So TMQUICKIE is where you can sign up. All right. So now let's get into our topic. First of all, before I get into the lessons learned, I wanted to share with you a little excerpt from our Unfuck Your Biz book about why you should register a trademark. Now, this is only like a half a page, so I won't be reading for too long, and then we're going to get into our lessons. So why register a mark? Registering a trademark at a federal level provides several benefits, including the right to exclusive nationwide ownership of the mark, except where it's being used by prior users, the right to put the circle R symbol after the mark. This puts others on notice that you own the registered mark, and a legal presumption that the registrant owns the mark. Remember that trademark rights are given to the person who first uses the mark in commerce, not the first person to file, although filing is still a great idea rather than relying on being first in use. You'll notice that this use in commerce phrase will continue to pop up. This simply means you're actually using the mark to sell a thing. If you rebrand, your new mark isn't being used in commerce until you release it to the world. There are two types of applications: use in commerce, a mark filed while it's actually being used, and intent to use, a mark filed before the applicant has begun using the mark in commerce. And then I go through some sections on qualifying for registration and filing a trademark. But that is the general gist of why you would want to register a mark. It really stamps that name with your ownership on it. I think I said that backwards, but you get the point. Okay. So things we have learned since filing these registered trademarks. Well, one, likelihood of confusion is maybe not as big a deal as I thought it would be, or at least it hasn't come up in about the 8 marks that we have had processed by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. So what does likelihood of confusion mean? Well, the general principle with trademarks is that you can get them approved if they're not likely to be confused with someone else's mark. That's kind of the entire point of a trademark, is you can't have two goods or services with the same name that are like similar in the goods or the services. So like two shoe companies can't both be named Nike. Otherwise, what's the point of the trademark? So if your mark is likely to be confused with a different mark, then you're not going to be approved for registration. I thought this is something that would be interpreted very strictly, and it hasn't been so far. Granted, we've only really been filing marks that we thought more likely than not would be approved. So we have filed a couple that we think will be a slightly less likely to be approved, and that's something we always disclose to the clients, but those haven't popped up yet. So that's a good thing. It just tells me moving forward that we can be a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit more aggressive with the marks that we're filing. When we started out a year ago, anything that seemed questionable to me, we were referring out to a more experienced law firm so that they could make that judgment call. And now we're starting to gain more confidence as we've gone through more applications. Two, the second thing we've learned is that people really need to stop filing their own trademark applications. Now, this is something that I really already knew before, because I'd heard a lot of stories from previous non-trademark clients and from other trademark attorneys, but it's something that we're starting to experience firsthand. And the reason why folks should not be filing their own trademark applications is because trademarks, they're a bit of an art and a science, but I would say more of an art, in that the way you craft your application significantly impacts A, the likelihood the application will be approved, but B, your ability to enforce the application. So a lot of folks out there think like, oh, I filed my trademark application on my own after I spent like 5 hours trying to figure out how to do it, and it ended up getting approved. So clearly it's not that hard and everyone can do it on their own. But then when they go to enforce the trademark, they realize that their registration doesn't really have that much teeth to it because of the way they prepared it. Or maybe they go to file similar marks, so they want to expand that mark to include different goods and services, and they're not able to do so because they kind of messed it up the first time. But the bigger issue is that when they file the marks incorrectly, they don't get approved, and then they get office actions back from the USPTO. And those office actions are really due to a mistake in the application. And now hiring a law firm to fix the mistake is going to cost quite a bit more money for them than it would have if they had just hired a law firm in the first place. Other common mistakes are missed specimens. So when you apply for a trademark, you have to show proof that it's out there used in commerce, which usually for most of us would be screenshots of sales pages for online businesses. Also, incorrect descriptions, so not describing your goods or services correctly. Those are typically easier things to fix, those two things, depending on when it gets caught. So that was the second thing that we've learned or verified. Number three, merely descriptive marks are a big deal and something that most folks wouldn't inherently think about. So to explain this one, I'm going to read another little section from the book on trademark strength. All right, so stick with me. Trademark strength. Riddle me this. Let's assume you come up with four potential business names. None of them are taken. You're in the clear. Do you think each would be equally easy to register and protect? Answer: It depends. Some marks actually are much easier to protect than others. Some can't even be registered. Trademark law has invented a system based on the quote-unquote strength of a mark. A strong mark is easy to protect, while a weak mark may be difficult or impossible to protect. There are five levels of strength with varying rules, which I can most easily demonstrate in visual form. Generic marks provide no protection. Examples would be trying to trademark the word coffee for a coffee shop. Descriptive, no protection unless you prove secondary meaning. So example would be like the business Cold Stone Creamery, which just kind of describes the goods there. Suggestive, suggestion marks do provide protection. Examples would be something like Netflix, which would be flicks or movies on the internet. Arbitrary, high protection examples include Apple or Dove. So these are typically things that are words, but don't really have anything to do with the good or the service. So the company Apple provides technology, not apples. You get the picture. And then fanciful is the last one. They provide the highest level of protection. And these are often words that are just made up. So like Polaroid, Xerox, that kind of thing. A generic trademark would be one that's simply the name of the thing you're selling, like I just mentioned. Okay. I just realized I was describing the chart. And then in the book, I obviously described the chart as well. So we went through those steps. Usually, when we file a mark, we want it to be at least suggestive. We don't want it to be generic. We don't want it to be descriptive. So I actually dealt with this personally when I went to file the trademark for the contract club. So our contract club application got originally denied because they said it was merely descriptive of a club that you can join that provides contract templates. And I actually worked with another attorney and we submitted a brief to argue against the refusal on it being merely descriptive, saying, well, it's not really a club because it's a one-time payment. There's no monthly fee. There's no dues. We don't have any kind of membership screening. We listed this whole list of arguments explaining why it wasn't really a club. Now, contracts, that one we couldn't really get around. We'd have to disclaim that word anyway. It's a whole nother topic. But we submitted that, and the attorney that I worked with, she's actually a mentor of mine. I took her online course to learn how to do trademarks, and then we kind of bring her in on any more complicated issues. She said the likelihood that we would be able to overcome the denial would be about 50-50, and it still ended up being denied. I paid her, well, I don't know if I want to say how much I paid her, not because I mind, but because she might mind, right? Because that's also her money, right? But I paid her to help draft that brief and it was denied. So this is something I'm keeping a closer eye on moving forward when it comes to marks that might just be purely descriptive. So another example would be I'm in San Diego. If your business was like San Diego wedding planning, that's just merely descriptive of someone who does wedding planning within the city of San Diego. So that would be a no-go. Like, we would not take that application. Okay. So what's number four? Number four, you have to own this one isn't really a lesson. It's kind of a lesson learned. But this is something that I knew before and I just want to share with you all, right? So you have to own your mark. Apply now so you don't have to change it later. I really should have just made this a bullet point under why register a trademark. That's why. You don't want to have to change your business name, your product name, whatever later. You need to get your application in sooner rather than later. If you have a mark or you're using a name of a product or a service or a program that you really, really like. Okay. Number five. Working with the examiners isn't so bad. They want to move your application off their desk. Their goal is to not make things difficult. So when you file a trademark application with the USPTO, United States Patent and Trademark Office, it's going to go to someone called an examiner. So these are folks that are hired by the USPTO. I believe they're all attorneys, and they review your application and decide, they're the ones that decide if there are any issues. And if there are issues, they issue an office action. And sometimes the office action is very, very simple. Sometimes it's more complex. But I found them all to be very easy to work with because, like I said, their goal is to essentially go through their caseload, right? Like, I'm sure they have metrics that they have to talk to about their boss, about how many applications they get through in a week, month, year, whatever. And so their goal is not just to make things difficult. So sometimes we've had many circumstances where they just need us to disclaim a word. So for our ProfitRx application, they just needed us to disclaim the word profit, meaning we couldn't have any ironclad ownership over the word profit with regard to a program that helped people become more profitable, which makes sense because that term is just descriptive. The trademark as a whole, we could get. And I just emailed back and said, hey, not a problem. We can disclaim that. And they said, great, let me push your application through. So sometimes it's as simple as that. If you have to submit legal arguments, it can be, you know, a little bit more complicated. Number six, getting a trademark application approved takes even longer than I initially thought, because the publication process is actually taking about 3 months. So what does this mean? Originally, I thought most applications would get approved within a year, but as soon as we started filing trademark applications, well, really before that, the processing time to even get the application looked at was about 8 months on the shortest end, 10 months on the longer end. And then from there, after they review your application, you often are going to have that like office action back and forth. And then once they approve the application, it gets published. And then after it's published, anyone who wants to oppose your trademark has time to oppose the mark. And recently, like, they've been giving 3 months to do that opposing, the opposition. So we had marks that got approved in February, or at least they moved to the publication stage. And I'm recording this in April, and we are still waiting for a final approval of the marks. So at this point, it's taking right around a year, like 12 to 13 months on most of these applications. Number seven. The number seven thing we've learned is there's a lot of great names out there available to be trademarked, especially for online business folks when it comes to course names, membership names, names for online programs, those kinds of things. This is something I've learned doing the trademark quickie searches. Now, I said that we filed 22 applications. I've probably done searches for at least 75 trademarks at this point, I would guess. And sometimes I'm really surprised at some really, really great names our clients have that we search and it's like totally free and clear. And I think that this will change over the next several years. Online courses, I mean, the market's getting kind of saturated, just to be honest. And I think there are some really popular buzzwords. I'm trying to be careful because I don't want to give any away for our clients, because obviously if I share like buzzwords that our clients are using, then we have pending applications on, and then you're like, oh, I love that, I want to go do it too. That's kind of like a conflict of interest. But some super obvious ones, I think, would be anything with like the word academy in it. We see a lot of, you know, like, I don't know, small business bookkeeping academy, stuff like that. You get the picture. Other buzzwords. And I'm often surprised still how much availability there is around these. There are a few less obvious ones, but if I started listing them, you probably would go, oh yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So if you've landed on a program name in a particular that you really like and you don't want other people to start taking and you want to be able to enforce your rights over it, you should get a trademark application on that. Highly, highly recommend. All right. And then lastly, the eighth thing I've learned is that trademark applications can be a very easy process, or they can be a very lengthy one. It all depends. That's also something I pretty much already knew, but it's just been confirmed. Out of the applications that have all been processed by the USPTO that have been assigned an examiner, luckily our contract club one is the only one we've had to do significant back and forth on, and that's good because that was my trademark. All of the rest of them, we had to do some, you know, very minor amendments, like those disclaimers I mentioned on some, but they've gone through pretty well. So if our clients hire us, they're very responsive and communicative, get us the information they need, I usually get the application in within a week at the time the client hires us. And then it's just a waiting game from there. And then at this point, you know, hopefully I'll have better percentages moving into next year. But at this point, we're seeing, you know, like 80% of the time with our very low sample size, we don't have any substantive issues barring the trademark from being approved. So that was it. Those were our 8 lessons learned thus far after a year of doing trademark applications. Remember, if you want to get started with the process yourself, you can go to notavglaw.com/TM quickie to get started. We can do your quick search. And then if you want to actually file a trademark application, we have a couple different ways we can help you. And I would be happy to chat with you about that. Thanks as always for tuning into the podcast. And I hope you have a fabulous day. Hey there, before you go, I wanted to give a quick thanks. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. If you loved it, I would love for you to take a screenshot of the episode or snap a quick selfie while you are listening. Share it on social and give me a tag. It'll help other kick-ass entrepreneurs like yourself find the show. That's it for today. I'll be back soon with a new episode. Meanwhile, let's roll up our sleeves and unfuck that biz.